back, everybody. It's Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Good to have you with us, and we continue our conversations I like to call Theater Baltimore. There's a lot of cool things always happening in town here in theater, and one of those things is happening at Center Stage, as usual, their new lab theater that they've created, working with plays and playwrights, developing them for live audiences, and we are meeting one of those playwrights today, and the man who's running that for Center Stage, Gavin Witt's back in the house, Center Stage director of dramaturgy, as well as the director of this Thanksgiving play. Good to have you. See you again, Gavin.
Great to be back, Mark.
And Larissa Fast Horse is in the studio, playwright, director, choreographer, performer, who wrote the Thanksgiving play and joins us from out of town here for the days he's performing. Welcome to the studio, Larissa.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Good to have you here. And you all can join at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org by email. You can also log on to the Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. And we'll let you know how to get the fast-going, almost gone tickets for this thing, but you might want to get in. So, Gavin, so talk a bit about the – we talked – months back when Kwame was on there, when we were all there together, about this lab theater and what you're trying to do. Why don't you refresh our listeners?
Great. Yes. And thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah.
So the Play Lab, as we call it, was devised about half a dozen years ago now as a workshop space for playwrights to continue developing their plays, but also to integrate audiences into that process, actually. So it's less about the performance of the text for people, kind of as, you know, as people are sometimes often used to a second stage, right, where you get new plays performed for you. But the idea was to take the workshop and then open up the workshop, the developmental process for audiences. And that's what the lab name came out of. The audience actually gave it to us. We were calling it something else before that. So we bring the writer in, and they get one unadulterated day just in the room with actors to hear and encounter the play all together. We get a little bit of rehearsal time and conversation time. And then we bring patrons, audiences in to be part of that, but it's not a performance. We share that, and we
it's a reading.
To hear it. It's a reading,
and
they're on scripts at music stands. Very simple. Maybe a little bit of gesture, a little bit of trading places at most. That's about as much staging as it is. And the writer will then get to encounter the play. There's a different performance energy that actors will get when you let people in the room naturally, and we get feedback, and then we repeat that for 3 days. And they can do rewrites along the way. So the play that is read Sunday is often extremely different from the play that we came in with on Thursday and
so
along the way.
Tonight is the opening night?
No. So tonight, Thursday night, is just all day from
noon
to 8.
Rehearsals
we'll be in the
today.
Rehearsing yeah, today. Yeah, don't scare us. And then we'll rehearse a few more hours tomorrow, Friday, and then the first reading. It's not really an opening, but the first reading will be Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 7:30, and then Sunday at 2. We're all at the Lord Baltimore Hotel, which you probably were going to say.
Because Center Stage is still under construction.
Got a fantastic renovations going on.
Yeah,
we're not back
amazing.
There till this winter. But
that's cool.
The Lord Baltimore has been amazingly generous in giving us this tremendous little space. And it's actually kind of wonderfully appropriate for the lab. It reminds me a little of a little operating theater room. But this transparency,
I know, I'm like, I haven't seen it yet. But,
in a good way, in a good way.
And so, Larissa, it's good to have you in the studio. Welcome to Baltimore.
Thank you. It's my first time. I'm really excited.
Cool. So how did you end up in this process?
Actually, I first met Kwame, the artistic director, it's now been almost 4 years ago. We're both on the board of directors of Theater Communications Group in New York.
In New York, TCG. Yeah.
And so I met Kwame then. He was already on the board when I joined, and we got to know each other. And then Gavin and I got to know through the My America 2 series of short plays that they filmed.
Right.
They commissioned me to write one of those. And
That's right.
Yes, yeah, so I haven't been here before. Gavin and I have exchanged many, many emails and worked together remotely.
Modern
yeah.
way.
Yeah, exactly.
And the play you've written, this particular play, is a comedy and satiric.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I hope...
It is.
I hope it's funny. You sounded really concerned.
No. I was trying to describe. I am deeply concerned about your play. I felt bad, so I wanted to have you on the air. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's an incredible play. I read it again this morning. I read it in the last couple of days, and I like it a lot. I mean, it's one of those plays when I read that you actually laugh as you're reading it.
Cool.
So
it is a comedy. Good.
It's very much a comedy. But talk about the play a bit.
Yeah. So the Thanksgiving play, I always have to be careful how much I say. I'm newly interviewed about this one. It's a brand new play of mine. It's was written through the Joe Dowling Anna McCarrig Fellowship from the Guthrie Theater. So I got to go to Ireland to write it. And
That's tough.
Yeah. It was sad. I had to sit in the countryside in Ireland being fed amazing food. So it was a really, though, I say that because it's a really interesting setting to be writing this play because it's about Thanksgiving, but it's also about the absence of Indigenous people from the narrative, the absence of Indigenous people from history, really, in this country. They're rarely mentioned. If they are, it's 90% of the time from a non-Indigenous perspective. So for me to be in Ireland, where they're the same thing has happened, where the Indigenous culture has been so well erased and is only kind of reviving in the last, couple decades.
Right.
It was really a beautiful place to talk to those people there, the people who do consider themselves original Irish, and talk about how that erasure sometimes hilariously presents itself now, and how, as both of our countries are going through an attempt to revitalize and recognize those Indigenous cultures, the ridiculous contortions people go into to try to be respectful, try to be PC, as we say,
right.
To try to show respect. It becomes comical. So.
And your characters they're all white characters.
Yes, they are. White-looking, at least.
White-looking characters, right. White-looking characters.
Yeah.
Spoiler alerts.
Well, it's right there in the beginning of the play. It's just the top. Just read it.
Yes. So, they are. And that may or may not. So it's about four people trying to devise a politically correct Thanksgiving play without necessarily any Native Americans in the room, which may or may not be a metaphor for American theater in general.
Which you've spoken about a lot.
Yes, I
and
have.
And known to have spoken about a yes. lot.
Yes, I say a lot. it's it's fascinating how often I hear about things. TCG, who I can talk about because I'm on the board and I support them 100%. But a few years ago, they were having diversity forum. The fall forum was entirely about diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be in D.C. at the NEA panel, the theater panel there. And Ralph Remington, who was the head of the theater department at the time, was like, Larissa, have you looked at this? They're doing an entire weekend on diversity, and there's not one Native American person speaking, attending, nothing. No one there. And I was like, how on earth can you have a talk about diversity on our own land and not even have one Native American person in the room? So it's something that unfortunately... And so I called Teresa Eyring, by the way, the head of TCG, and she said, please, you're right. Please, can you come down? We'll take care of you if you'll come and attend the conference. So it's just something that even in the best meaning world happens again and again and again.
Over and over. Yeah. Well, and I think that's one of the things that struck me about the play that you wrote, the reason I liked it so much, is this subtle but very obvious in some places ways you talk about the invisibility
in
this play in a very humorous way.
Yeah. And a lot of the challenge of the play was when you take a topic that's really about nothingness, like how do you depict that and how do you make that interesting theatrically and show it on stage? So, we build to really just showing what nothing is. Doesn't that sound exciting?
This play, how can you put a play about nothing? No, I'm just kidding.
And they ended up not selling yet any more.
It's a wonderful piece. I mean, I really do enjoy it, and I've done a lot in the past about trying to bring all kinds of voices to the air and Native voices and Native writing voices as well, and in the beginning, you still have to really search and find places to pull people out of because it is so hidden from the world, and sometimes on purpose, and sometimes because people just don't think,
right?
Or both,
yeah,
right.
But that is actually—the thing is that is intentional, right? We've all been through, hundreds of years of intentional policy, intentional practice from this government to make sure that we are erased and that everybody in this country, including myself, does not have a frame of reference, an education, an awareness to see these people, to see the cultures, like the cultures here. I have asked several people who the original people were of this area. They don't know. They have no idea. And, you know, thank you, by the way, to the original people of this area for us standing on their land right now, because we're all standing on someone else's land.
Right. Right. Well, absolutely. This is and there is a Native community here.
Yes. Lumbee community is huge.
Lumbee's huge.
Yeah. A lot of Cherokees.
A lot of Cherokees are here as well, but there's a big community here.
Yeah.
Center's right down on Broadway on the east side. Native American Center's here, American Indian Center. Let's go back to the play just logistically. Yes. So, I mean, and how you're putting this on, you talked about it being almost like a reading, like almost like a radio theater piece.
Absolutely. It in some ways, it's like if you went into an old-time 1940s radio performance piece, and they'll be standing at the music stands reading. We won't have all the Foley sound effects, but... Yeah, the actors stand and read the script, and it's a theater of the mind. It's a theater of the imagination. It's something you might call it a concert reading if you've ever been to a performance of a musical or an opera or anything where they just stand.
Let's talk a bit about what this is all about. I mean, so this you've written a number of other plays,
yeah,
and choreographed other things as well. I mean, you've been around a while. You were a dancer before that.
Yes.
And so when you take a play like this, which is your newest work, at least I think it's your newest work.
Actually, I just wrote another one, so
I'm not surprised.
My second newest work.
Your second newest work. So, and you're in a lab situation here, like at Center Stage. So what does that mean? What does that mean for the play and where it might be going, and what's the process? I mean, what is this thing about?
Well, I'll say for me, I mean, it's really, this play is also, I go straight from a workshop of this play here to Portland, Oregon on Monday to workshop this play again. I have a table room stage commission from them, which is a finishing commission where they find a work that you're working on and say, hey, what do you want to work on? What would you like to have some money to help you finish? And this was a play they chose. And so I'm going to continue to workshop it there. So this is actually couldn't have been better timing when Gavin contacted me about doing this play, because it's a very new play. You guys will be hearing the first public real draft of this play, mm-hmm, which is pretty exciting. Terrifying too, though, because it's really new. And I just sent a new draft to Gavin this week, and I have scenes that are in italics. I say, I have no idea what this scene is, but maybe it's something like this. So what's cool about that is, because it's a comedy, you really need people in the room. You need people to
respond,
react and to laugh,
right,
or
right,
not.
That's right.
And you need to know that. So as a playwright, this is incredibly valuable. As scary as it is to show something that's so new, it's so valuable to have this time in the room with three audiences, which is amazing, so that I can check those sections that I wasn't sure about, refine them, continue to rework them, find where things are missing, and then continue to work on it next week in Portland.
In Portland.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, I don't want to lose the piece that's about coming around the table, too.
Yeah.
Because
what do you mean?
When you write that work, is so new, it's existed in her mind and on the page or the screen, and maybe you read it aloud to yourself, some people do. But when it gets in actors' mouths, even that is another step along the way, right? They can respond. Why am I saying
right.
this way?
Because the way an actor interprets something can change even what you
find.
Think about
yeah.
how you wrote it.
It teaches
right.
this
right.
first. I have found increasingly doing many of these workshops that this first time the actors sit down and read it, sometimes you call it a cold read if they're not so prepared. Right? The colder the read, the more informative it can be to the playwright. Is where those actors' instincts take them or don't take them will sometimes tell you. You think you've written it, or my understanding yeah. from writers is that you think you've written it that way, but actually they find something else. Sometimes that's great discovery, sometimes it's not. But along the way, and then you add the audience into the mix, and you get a sort of a new alchemy that's added in. And it was important to me as we developed this that there be that succession of three and the kind of back and forth. Often you will spend time, maybe up to a week, around a table, and you work on the text, and you work on the text, and you rehearse it, and then you stand up and you put it in front of an audience, much like a regular performance, right? And,
right,
and then there it is. It's done. But the chance to kind of tinker and then go back and tinker and then go back and tinker, I have found the writers really appreciate and take advantage of. We've had people do everything from come back in with just some index cards and say, I mean, you think italics, I'm not sure what the scene is. They've literally just had index cards and said, and then some other scene will happen here. We don't know. It's really a place of a lot of permission for the writer
yeah.
As you go through your process, because people don't realize it's doesn't just come fully formed.
Right.
Brilliant as Larissa is.
Yeah, no, and I'm definitely a writer that I'm. The way I work is I call it my puke draft. My first draft, I literally just puke it out. I have to start and I write until I get to the end. And I don't outline. I don't know how it ends when I start. I just have to puke it out and see what happens. So the first draft you read is the puke draft. just so you thought you'd want to know that. I just start putting that on the first page. So that's, I just literally write beginning to end. And then I go back and I rewrite 1,000 times. It goes through so many drafts before I'm done. But especially in comedy, though, the opportunity to have audiences is a real gift that Center Stage gives a writer.
I'd want to just interject that one of the reasons, many reasons that Larissa is here in endorsing that is that I was so impressed when we were working on My America 2 with her rewriting capacity, that her taking notes, integrating them, that the adjustments, the draft process was, you notice that when you're a dramaturg, and that says a lot for playwrights.
We have I see that one of these tweets are coming in. Oh, this is the tweets about the next show, not about this show. But we do have this. Aize Savitar writes in, sounds like a good show. So,
we agree.
Morgan State University graduate student.
Yay.
So let's get him down there.
Yeah.
Bang the doors. Open them. That's right. Force another performance.
Well, it's ironic when we're talking about trying to stage invisibility or absence and there's too many people in the room. But we want to get the right people in there. So get in touch with us. Let us know. We'll try to find a seat for you.
No, I think this is an exciting process. And I'm glad you're here. I mean, I think that your work before, and I just want people to know this. I mean, you've been doing this for a while, and you have some really a really great body of work in the years you've been doing this stuff.
I
think this is really good that the theater is bringing you to Baltimore, and we need that bringing your element of your work, which is, I think one of the things I think about your work is that you, how do I put this? As a Native American playwright, you try not to let yourself get pigeonholed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And very clearly you want to kind of do things that stretch the envelope.
Yeah, totally. And I think, it's funny because people often ask me if my work is political. And I'm like, well, as a Native American woman, I'm a political statement just walking around the planet. I have no choice, with a name like Fast Horse, I can't hide it, I've often thought of changing my husband's name as Hogan. I've often thought of just using that. But I won't. So everything I do is inherently political just by my existence as a member of a sovereign nation within a conquering nation and being female in this world. So I really try to find ways that I can put those things into my art, but in a way that is translatable. I'm really fortunate. I've grown up in two worlds. I'm half white and half Native American. I grew up in the ballet world. Can't get more Western theater than that. I was a professional ballet dancer for 10 years before I started playwriting. And so I feel like my job has always been as a translator between worlds. And so I'm able to take the experience of being who I am and people that are not as much on the line as I am, people who are maybe much more traditional, have not has as much exposure to the Western world, and I'm able to translate their experience, but also translate in a way that the Western community can understand it and that works within Western theater.
Right.
And I feel like that I've been very fortunate to have been given that path, and so I really try to use it and amplify those voices in ways that cross the line as I've been allowed to cross the line.
No, I think that's really important. I mean, it's very powerful that way you just put it as well. I'm sorry, were you going to say, Gavin?
No, just I think I'm struck by your characterization of that is that it seems to me you write with a tremendous amount of empathy, which is at the heart of theater anyway, this endeavor to kind of create someone else's experience and allow us to have it as our own. But in the piece you did for us for My America, too, as well as here, your capacity to walk in the shoes of others and then to kind of invite others into those shoes to have that experience and to understand it from within. This play, as scathingly satirical at times as it is, and hilarious, has so much
it
heart.
It is hilarious.
And is written with such empathy as you watch these people go on this tremendously profound journey, actually, within starting from a place of well-meaning and ignorance and groping. It's a great capacity, I think, that translator skill that you were talking about, I think, is at full force.
It's, I think it's also that, you know, it's interesting that, you're here at this very moment.
Yeah.
When stuff is opening and happening in your homeland.
Yes, it is.
At Rosebud,
yeah.
Which we talked about a long time yesterday on the program.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
With folks from out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that is kind of an interesting kind of twist of fate, it seems to me.
Yeah, it's been crazy. You know, I've talked to so many people back home that are on their way, or they're on their way back home to deal with the pipeline and deal with everything that's going on back home. And it's a crazy time. I mean, I was just explaining to someone yesterday. It's probably a first in history since contact, at least, to have over 200 tribes together,
right, together.
Gathering and
right.
supporting each other and working on one goal. You know, yeah, we had a lot of alliances in the war against the American government, but this is huge. Because of the time it took to sweep for the white folks to sweep across this nation, we didn't have this large of a group gathering at one time, because hitting, you know, small groups at a time, as opposed to something like this. And this is amazing. I mean, this is something I don't think this country's ever seen.
No, it's amazing. I'm talking to friends of mine at Wind River, and they're actually out hunting elk and deer to bring meat up to the encampment now.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So it's cool. I think it's amazing that this has come together. So tell us about where the performances are and what possibilities are people seeing what's happening here.
Excellent.
Where were they
so,
going?
Yes, the details are. So, again, we're at the Lord Baltimore Hotel at 20 West Baltimore Street in this wonderful space up on the mezzanine. It'll be easy to find. There's fantastic refreshments when people get there. That's all sort of great. So 20 West Baltimore, Lord Baltimore Hotel. They can come this Friday, the 16th, at 7:30, Saturday, the 17th at 7:30, or Sunday, the 18th at 2 p.m., tickets are $10 if they exist, but we'll do all
how
we can
do they,
how to
people contact
in.
For tickets?
So either they can go to our website, www.centerstage.org, and find us there, or call the box office, 410-332-0033.
And we'll put that on our website.
And if that's up, that's great. Please call. Don't be hesitant to go onto a wait list. There are often no shows because it's something people buy well in advance sometimes, but it's worth trying to come. And actually, Lord Baltimore's offering a drink discount if you have tickets to Playland. So you can stay and enjoy. They have this gorgeous, best view in the city from the top floor. It's an incredible
view
of downtown. But this is a play. I think you're right, Mark. It's a tremendously resonant moment to have encounter this play. And in the sweep of some of the other issues Larissa was talking about, just sort of as we increasingly try to be more inclusive, be more representative, to recognize the absences are there, the play is a kind of a delicious way for people to encounter that and to try to tackle some of what's going on.
I'm very excited this is here. Gavin Wood, always good to see you, director of this Thanksgiving play. Is also Center Stage's Director of Dramaturgy. Good to have you in studio with us. Always good to see you, my friend.
Thanks for the time.
And Larissa Fastros, it's been a real honor to meet you and have you here. And welcome to Baltimore. Glad you were here today.
Thanks. I'm loving it so far. Can't wait to come back.
So this is great. I can't. And actually stage the production.
Yeah, there you go.
Did I say that?
I thank you. Mark said it.
Thank you. Good to have you both here. So we're going to take a very short break and come back after the news. It's time for Sound Bites. Don't go away. We're looking at water tax hikes and more. Stay with us.